Welcome to the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast, presented by 13 Fishing Canada. Make your own luck. We're here to scratch that angling itch and talk everything fishing. Join us as we sit down with special guests from across the industry. Now, here's your hosts, Brandon Cater and Logan Lewis.
What is going on, Weekend Warriors? Welcome back to the podcast. We have part two coming up with Doug Wagner, you know, the Muskie legend down there in Green Bay in Wisconsin. Obviously, if you tune into the past episode, we had a great talk with him about all kinds of topics, and this is going to be another second portion of that interview. So we appreciate you guys for tuning in. It's been a fun start to 2022, that's for sure. But yeah, got my co-host Logan here with me, and it's going to be a fun one.
Yeah, should be good. I think we kind of got an idea who Doug was in the first part there. And then I think we get a bit more technical with some techniques and stuff like that in this second part here. So definitely some learning opportunities there from someone who's been, well, I guess obviously as a guy, but someone who's been doing it all the time, right? Like even, I think there was even some stuff for lake trout and whatnot in there that we were going to talk about in part two here. So yeah, it's definitely one more of a learning one. We already got to know Doug, so definitely some tips to pick up that I'll be using. Hopefully in March, might be doing a lake trout trip, actually, but that remains to be seen. You got any trips planned?
I would love to get up north for some lake trout. I mean, I had a trip planned last year up at Lac La Ronge, and that got canceled due to COVID, and I just haven't had time to really plan anything. I was talking to the gentleman up there at Hunter's Bay on Lac La Ronge, and he kind of mentioned that the ice conditions are still pretty sketchy. He's not even really taking bookings for his lodges right now, so might have to look at some different options, maybe head over to Manitoba as well. I don't know. I'd like to get there this season, but honestly, just been so busy. I'm just excited to get out fishing. Hopefully this weekend, fingers crossed, going to get maybe the tent set up and do some ice camping. That's the plan. Anyways, I mean, who knows if it's going to happen. That's the plan. Get out, do some walleye fishing, and maybe spend the night on the ice and do some burbot.
Yeah, with your new flasher.
Yes, sir. So yeah, just made the switch over to Garmin, and I know you did the same, so it'll be interesting.
I'll be running one of each, but
yeah. So yeah, I sold my old unit, and gentleman down in Estevan, hopefully he enjoys that and gets good use out of it. He was pretty excited. He was making the jump from a Vexilar F8, I think it was, so kind of one of the lower end models of the Vexilar flashers, into the, you know, the Helix 7, a little more digital, you know, LED screen. Mm-hmm. So he was excited about that, especially the option to use it on his boat in the open water as well. So, but yeah, we both made the switch. We purchased a Garmin EcoMap 95 SV. I believe the model is.
Yeah. I think the 93 is in the States and 95 is Canada. So
yeah. So it's, yeah, looking forward to getting on the ice this weekend and giving it a go. Finally have everything kind of set up and played around with it just a little bit. For those of you that are listening, I mean, there's obviously a huge debate kind of in the Hummingbird Garmin space when it comes to like the live imaging. Didn't go balls to the walls and get the live scope transducer. We just kind of got the head unit, and we're both going to kind of work towards getting the live scope in the future here. But for starters, we're just going to have the regular, you know, ice transducer, like just the regular flasher with mm-hmm. EcoMap unit. And hopefully, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, just playing around with it, the touch screen and everything, it seems to be super user-friendly, and obviously making the transition, it has Navionics, right? So I'm looking forward to playing around a little bit with that and seeing what kind of mapping is like here in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, no, I've seen some Navionics maps before with some of my buddies, and I'll actually, on the boat, I'll be running the Helix 7 still. And then I was wanting to get a 9-inch screen, and
yeah,
when this deal came at Cabela's there for these Garmins, you'd kind of be stupid not to. Like, I don't think I've ever seen Hummingbird kind of go on that kind of sale. So definitely happy to have this 9-inch screen. And then, like you said, down the road, who knows when it will be, but eventually make the jump, right, and start to get the Panoptics live scope and stuff like that. But I think I'll be getting the best of both worlds there. I really do like Humminbird's auto chart.
Yeah.
That live mapping is really nice. And I know, like, of course, every company has their live mapping and whatnot, but I really enjoy Humminbird, so I'll probably keep the 7. It's a full-blown unit, so it has everything anyways, but I'll be keeping the 7, using that more for mapping and stuff like that, and then have that 9 there and the Garmin, the 9-inch Garmin, and I guess probably have it off the other side of the boat, and that'll kind of, it has the side of a jing and stuff as well, and yeah, it'll be cool to mess around with that, the touch screen. And then, like you said, with it being the 95, it already has the Canadian maps and stuff, so
yep.
That'll be nice, at least to get an idea. I know I've seen on all those maps that there can be some that are off. Like, me and a buddy were just actually up at Last Mountain in kind of the more northern region, and we were looking at his map on Navionics. It's like, oh, if this is actually what it's like, it'll be pretty sweet. And we were going, we thought we were about 24 feet, and we drilled down, it was about 6. And we're like, okay, that's not right. But no, I think it should be a good experience with both the units.
Yeah, and right, just... got to try her out and really kind of, it's all personal preference. There's all these brands, all this technology, it's top notch. You know, everybody's got good products. It's just, there's a couple little differences that might make someone sway one way versus the other. And, you know, give the Garmin a try and hopefully, you know, it lives up to the reviews and stuff online that, you know, you and I have been reading. But yeah, even like trying to get products right now too, we've been talking about it for the last year, just the supply chain has been ridiculous too. So like, I was thinking about going Humminbird Mega Live, but it's just like, Humminbird's got a lot of issues with getting products out and stuff. I know I was talking to a couple of guys that were saying that they aren't even continuing to make the Helix 5 and 7 on the production line right now because of the chip shortage and stuff. So it's just like, I don't know, rumors too. It could be rumors, but like, right, Helix 5s and Helix 7s, those are probably the two main models that, you know, the main weekend warrior consumer going after. And those are kind of on hold right now too. So
yeah.
But yeah, anyways, looking forward to getting out and just wetting a line, trying a new finder and spending the night on the ice, hopefully, fingers crossed.
How many times have you done that before?
Two nights.
It's a pretty good time.
It's
CO2 monitors.
Yeah, CO2 monitor. Yeah, gotta be safe. And of course, you know, there's just so much that you have to take with you to really make it comfortable. And it seems like by the time you set up, like, right, you gotta pick a spot too that you're comfortable and confident in, because once you're set up and you got that cot and you got your floor mats and your heaters and stuff, you're not too mobile. So
no. Yeah. It's kind of nice to have that as like a hub. I know we've done like a couple day ones. We did last year, me and a buddy did at Diefenbaker. You kind of get that hub and you kind of move around during the day off that. But, and when you're on a good spot, definitely fun waking up to those bells and whatnot. And, we also did one, me and another buddy at Last Mountain last year. Cut up some bait, kind of hoping for burbot through the night, woke up, put the camera back down in the morning, and nothing had changed at all. Not a single fish had come by, I don't think, all night. So, and that's made for a better sleep.
Yeah, and that's the way it goes too, right? But yeah, regardless, I mean, it'll be fun. I'm actually curious, with all the snow that we've been getting too, just access and like, you know, being able to get to certain places that I want to get to and stuff too might be limited, so... we'll see. We'll play it by ear. I know a lot of guys, like I know Ontario just got dumped on today. You know, we got dumped on not long ago here, but weather's kind of warming up too. So we'll have to see.
The issue's the wind. Like, we took the shack out for the first time, or we finally got onto the ice for this year. I think it was 2 weekends ago now, maybe. Yeah, 2 weekends ago. And we had both of our trucks out there, mine and my dad's, and we got stuck 3 times, mainly because that sun disappears. It had been so cloudy, like we couldn't see the drifts at all.
Yeah.
And so you're kind of cruising along, right? But even still, we've been out to the shack like 6 or 7 times since then, back and forth kind of thing, trying to beat a trail, and that wind just blows it in every single time. So it's definitely been enjoyable, and definitely seen lots of posts of people thanking other people that have come across them when they're stuck out on the lake. So it's always nice to see that. We were lucky enough to have the 2 trucks, so we just kind of pulled each other out, leapfrogged each other. But Yeah, definitely lots of snow out there from anywhere I've been.
Oh, for sure. Definitely want to have two trucks out there or have someone know where you are, that's for sure. But all right, we got to give a quick shout out to our sponsors. Lots of them came back on for 2022, actually all of them. Of course, we have to say thank you and give a shout out to the Saskatchewan Wildlife Federation. I just renewed myself and my fiance's memberships, $36 for two. You can't beat it. Super cheap, goes to a great cause and supports everything that we love to do and enjoy right here in Saskatchewan in the outdoors. And of course, if you haven't yet, head on over to your app store, whatever that may be, Apple, Android, and download the Saskatchewan Master Angler program that is now available, and you can submit your big fish across the province.
Yeah, for sure. Also want to give a big thanks to Blackfish Gear for coming on again this year. We have an exclusive code just for the podcast in the show notes below. Save yourself 15% for us up here in Canada. More kind of that spring to fall gear for sure. Still wearing the pullover in the winter, but something to check out there. Very, very happy to have them on as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you can't buy anything in store for Blackfish Gear that I know of from retailers in Canada. So if you are interested in Blackfish Gear, which I know we've gotten a ton of messages about, you pretty much have to buy from their website. So if you are doing that, you might as well save yourself 15% off. So, of course, we have to give another shout out to Lucky Bastard Distillers. They came on for 2022. And here's a quick word from them.
There are certain moments in life that really stick with you. This is definitely one of them. The thrill of the dill, my friends, is not a myth.
Prohibition is over, Saskatchewan. Ask about LB's legendary Birmingham's Dill Pickle Vodka. After all, it's not a party until someone pulls out the pickle. Tours and tastings available. Call or stop by 814 47th Street East. And tonight, why not mix your Caesar with some Lucky Bastard?
It's the one with the pickle in it.
So if that sounds like something that interested you, we do have a code in the show notes below. Save yourself 10% on any of your orders Canada-wide. For sure, something that I'll be checking out in the next couple weeks here. Also want to give a quick thanks to JP Adventure Rentals for coming on. Quads, snowmobiles, sleds, everything like that. You can check them out online. Get your rentals in. I know it's going to be huge for those trips up north of Saskatoon, but we'll have a little bit of a word from him later on in the episode. But we should probably get into this interview, hey?
Yeah, absolutely. Another great portion of an interview with Doug Wagner. But yeah, okay. So in that little conversation there, you mentioned a figure eight. I mean, we've had Hoyer on here before. We've had a couple other people that musky fish. Like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, when I see, you know, your name or somebody says Doug Wagner, I think big musky. So if some of the people listening right now that, you know, because us here in Saskatchewan don't really have that luxury, what are figure eights? Just kind of quickly to touch on that for people listening. And then kind of for somebody that wants to go musky fishing their first time, they've never done it before. What are kind of your top three tips for a first time musky angler?
To start, like a figure eight is basically how you end your cast when you're musky fishing. So, like muskies are a very curious fish. They're known to be very hard to catch, or tough to get to bite, but they're very curious. So a lot of times they'll actually end up just chasing your lure all the way to the boat. And then once they get there, you know, in any other type of fishing, you just pull your bait out of the water and you make another cast, you know, or the fish spooks from the boat or whatever. But with muskies, they're really the king of the water, you know, the top of the food chain. So there's really nothing for them to be scared of, but they're a very curious fish. They don't eat a lot. They don't bite a lot, but they like to check things out. And with baits, you can actually really get them to trigger or bite next to the boat with this maneuver. And it's basically just taking your rod tip and doing just these big, you know, turns or ovals. Some people do ovals. I prefer eights. It kind of depends on the fish and their mood and their attitude. Like I could talk about 10 hours on how to do the correct figure eight. There's so many variables to it. Like it's incredible. But basically you're just making like a boat side maneuver, like a figure eight with your rod tip. And generally you want to speed up in the straightaways and then slow down in the corner and kind of give that fish an opportunity to take it and then pull it away, you know, and then hang it outside in the corner again. But I would say like, I don't body water, like Lake of the Woods fish are super follow happy and they love figure eights. if you're good with your figure eights, like I catch probably 75% of my fish on a figure eight at Lake of the Woods. Like if you're not good at that, like you are missing out on that many opportunities. Why they love it on Lake of the Woods so much, I'm not sure. Other places like Green Bay, I'd say it's more like 15% of fish are in the boat or boat side. And then, you know, it kind of changes from body water to body water. But yeah, like they are crucially important. And it is if by far my favorite way to catch a fish. Like when you can watch a fish come in and chase your bait all the way to the boat, and then, you know, you watch it come from them. You know, normally when they fall, they're in like a neutral mood, right? Like they're not looking to feed. They're not looking to, you know, not pay attention to you. Like they're there. But you have to convince that fish and change its attitude from neutral to aggressive, or, you know, aggressive enough to bite. And you get to make the correct changes in a split second and then watch it all happen and then watch the fish bite. Like that is, like it's sight fishing on steroids, right? It's sight fishing with 20, 30, 40 pound fish, right? Like sight fishing is cool. Ice fishing. But like, sure, you can see whatever, a bluegill or a trout or something eat sight fishing, but like, how about a freaking 40 pound fish at your feet? Like it doesn't get any better than that in freshwater. It just doesn't. But as far as like tips, like, and I, you know, come across this stuff a lot with guiding, like generally my biggest, you know, thing with people is correcting them on their figure eights, and people don't always do it the correct way, or, you know, we can kind of tweak those a little bit. Because guiding, I mean, especially muskies, like you're never guaranteed to catch a fish when you hire a guide to go muskie fishing, right? So I just want to make sure that my customers at least leave with a better knowledge of the fish, or at least the activity or what they're doing. And I just want to make them better fishermen. That's my overall goal. And if we catch a fish, that's a bonus. But basically the tips I have for people is from the basics, you always want to come into the boat first, right? So if you make a cast and your bait's coming in, right? And say your boat's here. Your bait's coming in. You always want to bring your bait all the way to the boat before you turn and then go outside. Okay, and what that's going to do is that's going to make the fish come in, right? And now you and the fish are face to face. And when you make that turn, now you're turning that fish away from you. And that's when you want to slow that bait down. And then you want them to hit it in that corner, right? And they're going to kind of T-bone it from the side. And at that point, they're not looking at you anymore, right? Or looking at the boat. At that point, they're looking away from you. Everything looks natural. It's just them and the bait, right? And a lot of times, too, when you're coming in, you want to take that rod and kind of bury that rod tip in the water and kind of go deep to get that fish's focus away from looking up at the bait and looking at you and the boat, and change that fish's focus to going down deep so they're not looking at the boat. And then you bring that bait up high in the corner. So when they get next to the boat, they're looking down. And then once you start to go out in the corner, that fish is looking up and there's nothing behind them, right? Like there's no boat, there's no person, there's no rod, any of that. So you always want to come in first and then hang it on that outside corner.
And you're slowing down that bait, right, which might trigger that bite. So
correct. So what you're doing, like say a bucktail is probably a lot of anglers' favorite bait. It's super simple. You reel it out, you cast it out, you reel it straight in. Now that bait is just doing the same thing the whole time, right? Now when you get to the boat and you can add this figure eight to it, you're changing the direction of the bait. So this thing's been coming in on a straight line, all of a sudden then just does a turn, right? Like that's a triggering factor for a fish. Okay. And then you can also play with your depth. You can play with your speed. Like there's a ton of variables that you can do boat side. And then you get to watch how the fish is reacting to it. And that's the other cool thing, is because you have to make the right decision and make the right move to get that fish to commit. I mean, some fish just come in and they're zombies and they're going to bite in the first corner. And then other fish, it might take, you know, I've had fish go around for 2-3 minutes before they finally bite. And it's just so nerve wracking. And you're just like shaking and you're getting like exhausted from doing this, like back and forth, and speeding up and slowing down. You're like trying to twitch it or whatever, just trying to get this fish to go. But it is like, it's the coolest thing in freshwater, hands down.
I don't doubt that at all. I think that'd be pretty sweet to watch.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible.
Well, that is one thing I like that you said. I read it on your website as well. Basically, something along the lines of actually giving your clients the knowledge base to be able to do that, not just come out and catch a fish, right? Like I think that's a huge thing with a lot, like some guide trips you go on, you're not learning much. It's just kind of, here's a rod, go and catch a fish kind of thing. And then like, you're not gaining anything from it. And I think that's the thing I like a lot. Like we had Eve Bizen on, sturgeon guide in BC. And when I was out with him, it was kind of along the similar lines as your website's kind of talking about, and what you tried to do is anytime that, I guess, a bit different fishing, right? Mm-hmm. We're fishing with bait. But anyways, the whole time that we're waiting there, he's telling us stuff constantly about like stuff that we can learn and things that we can do once we do have the rod, or when you're waiting for the bite, or basically what those fish are doing down there. It's not just us sitting down there kind of just chilling. Oh, here's a fish, and then you go and grab the rod, right? So I think that's one thing that's great that you do.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, the cool part for me as a guide is being able to teach people things that they can go and use in their own boat and be like, hey man, like, I get people all the time at shows like, hey man, like, I watched your video, and like this tip that you put out, like that caught me this muskie, like, hey, look at this picture of this fish that I caught. And like, I've had so many of those things where people are like, this is because of you, and they're not even customers. Some of them are just, you know, people that watch the videos. And but right. Having like that in, you know, that impact on someone when they're fishing, or, you know, doing probably their favorite activity to do outside of, you know, life or whatever they're doing is pretty special for sure.
Yeah. And I totally agree with you there. Like, I've obviously never guided at all, but like just this summer got my two buddies, and I actually three friends, and then my sister also on their very first lake trout, when we were up north. And like, yeah, I love catching fish. It's always a rush. It's always fun, but there's a different kind of rush when you get someone else on a fish. Hey.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And like people's first muskies or their biggest muskies, like that's a memory they have for their whole entire lifetime. Like to me, if someone catches, you know, say their first muskie and it's a 40 incher, like in 10 years, I'm not going to remember that fish, but like that guy mm-hmm. will remember that for the rest of his life. Right. Yeah. Or someone's biggest muskie, yeah. Like, it's such a cool feeling and opportunity. And that's like what makes my job awesome, is just the interactions with people and being part of people's memories.
Yeah, for sure. And that's just another reward outside of being able to do that for a job, right? Like you said, then they'll never forget that. The fact that they paid and booked you, that means that they wanted to be there, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then the fact that they get that, yeah, that's huge. And that's obviously, I guess, how you build such a good client base as well.
Right.
Yeah.
So obviously, muskie's your favorite species to guide.
Oh, hands down.
Because you guide walleye too, right? And bass, yeah. Smallies.
Yep. Yeah, walleyes and smallmouth. I mean, the walleyes are cool. Like, I love pre-spawn walleyes. Like, we have the opportunity here to fish our walleyes year-round. Our limits just change on what you can take home. And basically, my walleye trips are strictly catch and release. You know, I don't let anybody take any fish home, but we get fish that are full of spawn. I think last year we had like 12 fish over 30. But you get these big fat bellies, and like I love, absolutely love it. Like rip and wraps are a huge deal for us down here. And just yep. the way they thump those things, and swim baits as well, like they just freaking choke them. It's really fun. It's really, really fun. I really enjoy the walleyes, and then the bass are fun. I used to be a huge jerkbait guy for bass, but in later years I've really got into the hair jigs and more of the finesse stuff. And that's hard for me to slow down as a muskie angler, like to fish a hair jig, like a 330 seconds or eighth ounce is okay, but 330 seconds or 16th ounce hair jig for a muskie guy who is used to just like burning in a bucktail, yeah. to go to just like reeling like this, right? Like that is just so hard. But when you get that, just that slightest look, oh, it's great. It's great. Yeah. Muskies,
yeah.
Muskies, well, hands down, not even close.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah. I think that's a thing that's pretty cool about, well, I guess growing both of us growing up here, we always have, it's April, right? Yeah. April, no fishing, right? Unless you're doing stock trout, I guess that's when our season kind of ends for everything, spawn and stuff, right? So that's not something, I guess, that we get to experience as much around here, but it's always cool hearing stories of different places down the States, or like even Ontario, I think sometimes in Manitoba too, and kind of stuff like that, where you get to kind of experience those different bites, like were you talking about with the spawn and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool, and our DNR does a pretty decent job of, you know, pulling back the limits so people can't be taking fish that are about to spawn. But like our muskie season's closed. They close December 31st, and they don't open up till the end of May. Even though okay. our fish are totally stocked, and we have next to no natural reproduction in Green Bay, but there's other natural reproduction throughout the state. But yeah, it's a really cool opportunity. And honestly, as a guide, it's huge. Like, I can have in 75, 80 days before my friends in Minnesota even get one day of guiding in, just because their seasons are closed. So as far as yeah. business, I mean, oh, I can yeah. do 40% more Guide trips make 40% more income just due to that. And that's a huge reason of why I picked Green Bay to run my business and to base out of. I mean, I love guiding in Canada, and I would love to do more stuff in Canada going forward, but I will always be in Green Bay for the fact that I'll start guiding in, you know, March 20th is my first trip I've scheduled this year. And Canadian Muskie Opener doesn't open until June 18th this year. So, like, I have all that time, to run trips and guide people. And it's not about the money, but, like, you have to make an income. You can't just for 6 months.
Yeah.
You got to do something. It's either I'm going to be guiding walleyes and bass, or I'm going to be sweeping the floors or going back to construction. And I don't want to do that. Not at all.
Yeah. No.
No, that's fair. For sure. Yeah, it's a no-brainer. Okay, obviously, I mean, this is your fifth year. You guide muskie, which is like one of the, you know, fish of 10,000 casts. You got to have some pretty crazy stories. What is one of, if not the craziest muskie story you have?
This year we caught 250 inchers at one time.
So, like a doubleheader?
Like a doubleheader, trolling. So, I mean, I got a couple of good stories, but that one's probably... the top one.
That's absurd.
Yeah. So like, I mean, in the fishing world, right? Like, for it to compare it to people who don't target muskies, like a 50 inch muskie is like a 30 inch walleye. And you guys in Saskatchewan, you guys have giant walleyes. Maybe it's like a 32 inch muskie or a 32 inch walleye. I have no clue, but like a 50 inch muskie is absolutely huge. That is the fish of a lifetime. There are a lot of muskie anglers that never catch a fish of that caliber in their lifetime. But this year, September 9th, I had two guys in the boat, and we simultaneously caught a 50. It was like 50 and an eighth or 50 on the nuts, and then a 53 and a half incher at the same exact time.
Wow.
Basically, how it went down was the inside rod, we were trolling. September's kind of our month to troll. I do a lot of casting, a lot of trolling, kind of 50-50 on that. But so this sprint or whatever, we're trolling, and the inside planer board rips. I grabbed the rod, and we had already caught like two fish this day. Like they were biting. So inside rod rips. I grab the rod, hand it to the guy. He's fighting the fish. Planer board comes in. I take the board off, grab the net. I knew it. I could tell it was a good one. And fish comes up, and it's this really nice fish, super wide and fat. I'm like, all right, this is a good one, right? Like this is the biggest fish of the day. And I scoop that fish with the net. And I turn around to give the guy like a high five. Well, like when we hook up with the boat with that fish, like I slow the boat down. Like we're going 3.5 miles an hour when we're trolling. And I generally slow down to like 1 mile an hour once we hook up just to keep all my lines stay out. At this point, I've got 9 rods out. We can run 3 lines per person. So I've got, I slowed the boat down, but you have to keep going forward so that all your planer boards stay tight and all your baits stay out. And you don't get a big tangled mess. So I like turned around to like give the dude a high five. And this rod on the other side of the boat is just like, doing one of these numbers. I'm just like, oh, we got another fish, boys. So I grabbed the rod. Well, we weren't going fast enough for the drag normally rips out, right?
Yeah.
But when we were going 1 mile an hour versus 3.5, and I set my drags pretty tight. So, like, the drag wasn't going out, but the rod is just like it's a fish. Like, there's zero, no doubt about it. So I'm like, all right, like, here, dude, grab this one. I hand this rod to the other guy. And I start, like, working on this fish, trying to get the hooks out and – he's fighting it. This one was luckily like the third board out. It gave me some time. And I didn't think it was that big because like the rod didn't rip at all. So this whole thing's going down and like I got the surfish and I told the urges like, dude, like start filming. Like this is freaking nuts. I've only had this one other time. So I'm like, dude, start filming this. So he goes up in the front and starts whatever filming on his phone. And I'm like, all right, just like get this fish up. It's like, I just want to see how big it is. And I'm not going to net it. Right. Like this one that we have in the net's way bigger. Right, like this is a 50-inch fish. I knew it was a 50-inch. Like I'm not risking losing this fish in the net. Well, I get the planer board off, and Buddy brings up this fish, and I see it like surface like 20 feet behind the boat. I'm like, oh my god, it's way bigger, like way bigger. Like what am I gonna do? So, and I've had this happen one other time, and whatever, that was a total shit show. So I didn't go the route of what happened the other year when we had this happen. So I keep this fish in the net, and I have to like move my net around the back. The engine, because the fish was coming in on the other side of the boat. So I like move the net around. I've got a 50 incher in my net in the water, right? And here comes this freaking tank coming in. I'm like, all right, dude, like just keep reeling. We're going to get one shot at this. And I had him get her like really close to the boat. So I knew I could get it. And I freaking scooped that one. And that was 53 and a half. And we just like berserk. Wow. The crowd went wild. It was sick.
Just a quick 103 inches of fish in the same net.
Not too bad for 10 minutes of fishing. Yeah.
That's okay. I mean, that's a wild story. That's crazy.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it was absolutely wild. I've never had that. I know what's happened, I think, on St. Clair, which is another musky factor. But as far as Green Bay, I don't know anyone, and I'm friends with all the guides out here and know everybody, and nobody had ever heard of anyone doing that before. It was huge. Like it was big. It was a big deal.
I give that story 10 out of 10.
Yeah, that was good. I think we ended up catching another one. We caught like 4 or 5 fish that day. I think we caught another one after we caught those two.
Get your adventure on with JP Adventure Rentals in Saskatchewan. Whether it's remote ice fishing, hunting, trail riding, or just taking family and friends out for a day of fun, JP Adventure Rentals has you covered with brand new ATVs, snowmobiles, aluminum trailers, plus accessories. Visit jpadventurerentals.ca to make your reservation. Check out our sister company, Saskatchewan's best boat rentals, for all of your boat rental needs. Pre-book now. Get out there with JP Adventure Rentals. We rent fun.
So this kind of made me think of something I always see in John's stories. Whenever there's a pike, it's always minus two, right? or minus whatever.
Two, yeah. Minus two is over 40. Minus one is just a pike. Big one.
Okay, so I was going to ask, what are your thoughts on pike?
All right, I have a soft spot for pike. I'll move my phone.
If you look yes. right there, okay, that's a 48-inch pike.
I caught that. Yeah, I
really?
48?
March 17th, 2013. Yeah, so I have a soft spot for pike. That was ice fishing, targeting them, back when I used to like ice fishing. I haven't even tried to beat that fish, I don't think, very often since I caught it. But yeah, pike for us are like such a letdown, right? Like, you get bit, you think like, it's your muskie, it's this, that, and the other. And, you know, I mean, these things here are beautiful. Like, don't get me wrong, but like, this is what we really want. Right, like
What is that? 3/4
by 6 3/4. That's the biggest. Fish ever in my boat. My customer caught that fish. My PB. I don't know if you can see it. It's kind of dark. But yeah.
So are these replicas?
Rods in my absolute mess. But yeah, that fish right there is 55 by 25. That's my PB.
Wow.
Yep.
That's mind boggling. I've caught a 44-inch.
I bet I have enough service to take you guys down to the basement, the cave. There's all my musky lures are down there. I've got them all like hung really nice. It looks like a freaking tackle shop. It's pretty nuts. But
let's do it. All right, if you want to, let's do it.
Let me see. I should have.
Let's do it.
All right. MTV Cribs. No, this is just. Yeah. See, I got two boats. A truck and a business, but I still live in an apartment, so it is what it is. All right, so this is what happens when you walk down my stairs. Okay, so like you walk downstairs, and these are all musky baits, right? Like we've got toads, swimming dogs, bulldogs. But this stretches for quite a ways.
Jesus.
Down my wall.
That's a Thorn Brothers right there.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. It's pretty close. And then, like, this is all, like, multiple colors, right? So there's, like, four of these. So I have them all in pegs. So they're all, like, stacked and whatever. So that's nice. Looks nice.
And those are not cheap baits.
Oh, no. These average, I'd say, $30 a piece.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
That's American. So that's, like, 80 Canadian.
Yeah, that's, like, 80 Canadian.
So I've actually lure right here. So this thing. Can't even stretch my arm over. And this is a 24-inch bait, 2 feet long.
What?
Yep.
Wow.
And you actually use that?
Yeah, I got a video of it on YouTube, and there's actually a, you can see right there where the fish took a chunk out of it. Like, move my thumb. Right there, jeez. That like scuff right there. Yeah, took a bite out of this thing. Yeah. This is on pipestone on my wife's lake, but the lip is literally made out of 1/4-inch diamond plate.
Just so a little heavy.
Cool, but that's just the rubber side of the wall. So let me hang up that thing. So then if you get to this side of the wall, this is all bucktails here. These are all bucktails here as well. Stretch down this way. Ouch. Just stubbed my toe. But yeah, and then this was what I was working on today, hanging up all these. These are a bunch of crankbaits for trolling here, and then you go on this side, a bunch of crankbaits for trolling there.
So like,
that's just crazy.
Just going back, just going back to like when we were at the beginning of this podcast, when we were talking about how being a guide ain't all, you know, rainbows, and like the amount of organization, the amount of product, the amount of money that you have invested into this.
Yeah.
Just to give your clients an experience of a lifetime is actually unbelievable.
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, and like I say, like there's like here, I'm just organizing. There's just literally boxes and boxes of like baits. And that's just my musky stuff. Like you come back here and I've got shelving, like
yeah.
You know, like my walleye boxes and my bass boxes, and
look at all them rip and wraps.
Oh God! Like these are all brand new rip and wraps still in the package. These ones have to go get custom painted. But yeah,
are you a big jig and wrap for walleye guy?
Yeah, jig and wraps are by far my favorite bait for walleyes. But yeah, like here's like $1,000 worth of custom painted rip and wraps. That's one box.
Jeez.
Another box.
A lot of you people that are listening right now, you can't see this. We're going to do our best to make some social media posts about this, or we'll maybe post this interview up on YouTube, but you have to see this. This is unbelievable.
This is the rod department here. These are just the ones that I keep. I generally sell all my stuff at the end of the year, and then I get new thorn rods every year.
I seen on your story you were selling a bunch of combos, a
bunch of musky rods. But yeah, like all hair jig rods and specific rip and wrap rods and trolling rods. And like I'd say, the problem with Wisconsin is like we can run three lines per person. So like I have to have 14 musky rods just to troll. Just for trolling, I have to have 14 rods. And then for walleye,
I need
at least 10, if not a dozen. And then, you know, you need specific walleye casting rods and bass rods and hair jig rods and rip and wrap rods. And like, it is just, it's so incredible. Like I'd say I probably have 80 to 90 combos just to do the job, right? Like all these baits and stuff, this is way overkill. Wow. Like this is totally not necessary. I'm just a absolute hoarder of lures and love musky baits, in general, but yeah, that's my basement.
That is something special.
Here, I thought we were gonna go down to the basement. It's gonna be like a nice, like, lounging movie area.
Oh no,
nope.
Total disaster. This is my workbench. You can see it. I've got a lot of working space here. Total disaster. All these baits still need to get hung up and move. These are actually all Jesse's baits. Some of them.
So, and with that too, like, so, like here in Saskatchewan, open water. Obviously you're not allowed multiple lines. So like being three lines a person, like when you have, like, do you have, like, obviously you have a max of how many people you'll guide. Is that three? Is that four?
When I'm trolling, I'll do four. So that's where I get like the 15 rods, for trolling muskies. So if I can, I'll run 15. Like if I have the people for it, I can run up to 15 rods off my boat.
That's wow. Just wow. Like,
It's
15 rods. If you wanted to have 15 rods here in Saskatchewan off the boat, you'd need 15 people in the freaking boat.
Yeah, it's like what Minnesota is. Minnesota's one line per person. So, like, when I go and guide there, it's one line. And, you know, I don't troll a bunch when I'm there, but I troll a little bit. But then when I go to Ontario, it's all one line. It's a huge advantage, yeah, I would say. Right. But a lot of time, like Canada, you have the ability to fish, like, structure. And there's awesome, like, points and humps. And, like, you know where you want to be. Whereas a lot of our fishing on Green Bay is just these massive sand flats. And, you know, it's really, if I had one line, like, I'm pissed when I only have one customer and I got to run six rods. I feel like I'm not even covering any water.
Like, you look, oh my God.
He's got 9 or 12, and, you know, this guy and that guy, it's like, I'm just feel like you're not even doing anything. But like the flats we cover are literally like miles by miles.
Yeah.
So it,
okay.
One line on a immense flat of just straight sand, it's so hard to come across any fish.
So when you're, say you do have your max amount of rods out, how big is your wingspan, I guess?
I'd say about 100 to 120 feet off each side of the boat. So, I mean,
that's a lot of water being covered.
Almost a football field.
a CFL field.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's what are they? Two, yeah, I mean, 70 yards. 60 yards.
That's
pretty good
for you Canadians. 60 meters.
That's a big number. That's a big number.
I mean, people call it cheating, this, that, or the other, but it's the rule. So you just take advantage of it.
Have you, we haven't talked about it, at all, really. But you also have a YouTube channel. So anybody listening, if you don't, subscribe to Doug's, YouTube channel, go check him out. He does lots of great content. But your most recent one, obviously, was in Northern Ontario doing lake trout.
Yep.
Ice fishing, yep, which you love to do. So you're using Mega Live. Have you incorporated live imaging into your musky trips? How does that
happen? I haven't, yeah.
Is it?
Just because technology or whatever, just getting the stuff out was so far behind.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty tight with my guys at Hummingbird, and they brought out a unit with my bird guy. I think it was like middle of August. We musky fished for a day with it. It was cool. It was a pre-production model, so it wasn't nearly as crisp as what they have now, and we kind of jerry-rigged them out just to work for the day. And yeah, it was cool, but I mean, that ice fishing stuff, like I said, lake trout's really the only stuff. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I like big walleyes through the ice. Crappies are cool. But the trout are what are my favorite. And it's been really cool just to see like how those trout interact. And I've done two videos now since trout opener on the first with it and haven't posted. And the first day was literally my first day with Mega Live. Like I got it at 8 o'clock the night before, like New Year's Eve, and and fished with it. And then the second time I fished with the dead bait next to me as well, like 25 feet away. And it was just super cool to see how those fish react. And they would go from like chasing the tube to shooting over to the dead bait and then come back to the tube. And like, they were so like spastic, like they always had to be looking at something. Right. And I never realized how much they went like flying back and forth. Like I missed one once, and then like he didn't like spook. Like I hooked him partially. Like he just like took off. Like I expected to like never see that fish again, but with the Mega Live, like the fish literally just like swam over and went and stared right at my Cisco. And then 20 seconds later, I came back and chased my tube again. It's like, what, like mind blown. And it was cool.
Yeah. No kidding.
Of them, like a lot of them actually came in. Like I'd say every other fish I marked had another fish with it. Like there was two fish. So like one would come flying over the tube and I'd be like working that fish, paying attention to that. And then all of a sudden I'd see like this blob, like right on my Cisco, just like staring at it. And I had it suspended in the column just so everybody could like see what was going on. I mean, I know some people lay them on the bottom. I've caught them laying on the bottom or suspended, but I wanted to have it suspended to see what those fish were doing and how they're reacting to it. And I really wanted to see like how they bit it. Like, would they just come like flying in from the side and absolutely smoke it? Or would like go up to it, check it out, like bump it with their nose? And they're actually really timid with the dead bait. Like none of them came in and smoked it. I caught two fish on dead bait that day. But the one, like the flag tripped, and I could literally like just see the fish still sitting on the screen. Like it wasn't moving. I was like, did he just bump it or mess with it? And I was working another fish. So, like I didn't want to leave this fish because I could see the other one. It was like literally on my screen. And finally the fish that was on my tube fell off. And then the mark just kind of slowly faded out of the cone. I'm like, well, he has to have it. And sure enough, it was like a 6-pounder or something like that. But yeah, I film some of it. It's a pain in the ass to film ice fishing. Musky fishing is way nicer. Cameras like to work a lot more when it's warm out versus being whatever, minus 20 Celsius. And
yeah.
Yeah. But like that live imaging, like just the fact, like what you just talked about, with a regular flasher, there's no way you would be able to know what you know now, right?
Like I got to see
like
balls like move across in the spot, and like I seen some fish like on the bottom. They're probably like walleyes, or like it's a tool. It's just helping you learn and understand the fish.
Yeah,
yeah. I think that's the cool thing too about Ontario, I mean, obviously I don't know all the lakes in Saskatchewan, but it seems like lots of like Saskatchewan, like you guys will have over in Ontario, you have a lake, well, I guess like the woods is prime example with like every species, mm-hmm. right? I think that's something that's so cool is you can go out and you don't have to launch your boat. You obviously got to move around and try different places for those different species. But like for us, it's like, oh, I want to fish lake trout. Well, then that's probably one of the only things you're fishing in that lake, maybe other than pike, right? And then you want to go fish walleye or go into a different lake. So I think that's something, like you said, you're fishing lake trout, but it's probably walleye on the bottom that you're seeing there. Like that's, to me, that would be awesome.
Yeah. So I think next week I'm supposed to film a show with Linders. They're going to come up and come ice fishing, but it's like, they're like, oh yeah, can we like do walleyes and lake trout and crappies? I'm like, yeah, sure. We can do it all on like, I mean, we'll go to different lakes because they're a little bit better, but in reality, mm-hmm. there's one lake we could catch all three.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. I think that's the thing that's sweet. I think one thing that would be good, I guess, is kind of timely, right? Especially for us. I mean, it's a bit different. It's warmed up a bit now, but here in Saskatchewan, it seems like we really start to get like the January, February blues as far as fish activity goes. I don't know if that's a thing out east as well, but things definitely seem to slow down a bit. And I think that's when people start to do more of those trips up north for lake trout and stuff like that. So what would you have any suggestions or tips for ice fishing lake trout? I know not a ton of people get to do it down south here where most people are in Saskatchewan, but would you have any tips for that?
So my biggest thing with Lakers, and I know it's kind of different from Ontario, say, even Manitoba and into Saskatchewan. Like I talked to Clayton quite a bit, and I think just talking to him and then even just watching his videos, like those trout seem to be so much less aggressive. And like those guys will camp on a spot for a whole day. And I get it too. Like Clayton's setup is way more advanced and nice than mine as far as like all his cameras, and he's got everything. Like it's such a pain in the ass to get set up, and then to move all that stuff is even worse. Yeah. I'm super mobile. Like I fish a spot for 20 minutes. If I don't mark a fish, like I'm gone. I'm on to the next spot. And I just running and running and gunning. So I just keep moving is the biggest thing for me. And it seems like you just got to find, a pod of active fish. And you got to have a milk run of spots. And I always mix in a couple new spots generally throughout the day just to see what's going on. But the biggest thing, I shouldn't say the biggest thing, but one thing I have noticed with trout, and this is true with brown trout as well, is they pay attention to majors and minors. And when I say majors and minors, I'm talking about solar periods or lunar periods. And that's when the moon is directly above you, directly below you. The moon is rising and the moon is setting. And there's a gazillion apps out there you can get that information. But trout are definitely much more active during those times. So I always watch those every single day to see, make sure I'm on a spot that I know is good. Or, I'll mm-hmm. start out and get out maybe a little bit earlier if I know I've got a major or minor right away in the morning. But paying attention to those and being mobile, I would say, are my two biggest suggestions.
There you go.
Perfect.
To look into that. I haven't really paid attention to that part as much. I know or one of our previous guests, Tim Jenny, he likes the pressures, right? He's talked about that quite often when we've gone out fishing, but I haven't heard as much about dealing with the moon and stuff.
And that's a huge thing. Like that comes from musky fishing, like muskies
stuff
religiously. Like when you're looking for one bite a day, it's generally gonna happen in that window. Oh. Time.
There you go. And people thought fishing was just tossing a line out and hoping for the best.
It can be, but it's a lot more than that. It's definitely a lot more than that.
Perfect. I mean, Doug, we've had you for over an hour and 15 minutes already. Typically, our guests stick around for an hour. Is there anything that we didn't touch on that you'd like to talk about while we got you here?
No, I mean, if you guys have any other questions, I mean, I think we kind of somewhat touched the basis of mainly what I do as far as open water and ice fishing. I don't know. I don't, if there's anything else, anything else you guys have to add to it.
I don't think so as much. I think it's something like, obviously a lot of our listeners are Saskatchewan area and Manitoba, at least Manitoba has a place they can go for muskies, right? A muskie for Saskatchewan anglers, unless you're traveling, right? It's something you see here. It's a novelty, but they're not here, right? So I think I really enjoyed at least getting to kind of learn a lot more about them and just how different it is than I guess a lot of the fishing we do here, right? Like I mean, we've got pike, which whatever people think about the pike, like that's basically our muskie, right? So I think it's definitely cool.
Oh, don't even. Yeah. No comparison there.
But
yeah, pike bite anything. Muskies, no. Pike are not nearly.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing I found kind of cool is, for us here, for most people that are going out the weekend warrior, the go-to is like a red and white five of diamonds spoon, right? Oh, yeah. Like that's gonna get the job done. When you went down into your basement, I didn't see a single spoon, right? As far as muskie goes,
I saw a five of diamonds.
No, I mean, so my dad actually likes throwing spoons, but he's caught a couple muskies. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure they work. I know they work. But yeah, there's just and Green Bay, I will say, like where I mainly fish, they are so color picky here. It seems like all Great Lakes fish are bad. Like our bass or walleyes, like a ton. Like you saw me. I mean, that was a fraction of my custom color grip and wraps. And bass stuff going on from there. Like they are so color picky, and that's why I have a variety of colors and a lot of things I buy in threes and fours. Just so I have multiples for other people in the boat, because it seems like some days if you've got a bucktail with like six more strands of red tinsel than this one, or blue or green or black, whatever, than the other guy, that makes a difference. And it's incredible that way. But, you know, also you got to have all the stuff to do it for multiple people.
Right. Yeah. So I guess that's one thing. I don't know if Brandon had anything else, but I was kind of curious. Obviously, custom. I don't know if it's like if some of the stuff is secret, but I just from the point of view of going with custom colors, is that just to have something that's different than everything else everyone else has, or are you got like specific things that you're like, this is what I want?
Our fish just really seem to like purple and gold, our walleyes, as far as wraps. Okay. And Rapala doesn't really make I think it's called Lipstick. That's a standard purple gold color, and they did come out actually now the last couple of years with some decent new colors that work well for us here. But like I like a lot of purples and golds and coppers, like an antifreeze green. It just kind of changes from day to day, and I the colors a lot of times change with sunlight, you know, cloudy versus sunny and this, that, and the other. So
right.
There's a lot of areas there, and like a lot of that tackle too. I mean, I guide Green Bay, I guide Minnesota, I guide Lake or Canada, like there's three different bodies of water, and all those fish act differently. Like our fish in Green Bay, like a lot smaller baits. Fish in Canada, like, or Minnesota, like really big baits. And then the fish in Canada, like a little bit of everything. So like that amount of tackle is totally unnecessary. Like anyone who wants to get into musky fishing, like you can get 10 baits or a dozen baits and be pretty good across the board. This is a total excessive. I have a problem. I need to go to eight.
It could be a TLC show about you.
It's an issue, but I fish a lot of different places, and so that's part of why I have so many musky baits too.
There you go.
Yep.
Ah, well, it's beautiful. Your basement is beautiful.
I'm working on it.
But
70% done, I'd say. There's still plenty of stuff to get up yet. Work in progress.
Well, just send us a picture once you do get that work in progress complete.
Yeah, there's only, I don't know, 80 grand worth of fishing baits down there. I don't even want to think about that. I live in a freaking duplex. I freaking rent a place, but I've got 80 grand worth of baits. Wouldn't change it for the world, though. Wouldn't change it for the world.
It's all about priorities. And that's number one priority there.
Basement full of baits, 100 rods and reels, living, renting a house. Love it.
There you go.
Living the dream.
Priority.
But yeah, I mean, I've had you for an hour and 20 minutes now. Where can these people that are tuning in find you on social media? Obviously we talked about YouTube, but where else can they find you if they want to book a guide trip with you in probably the next 3 years, cause you're so backed up. Where can people do that?
So like any of my website, Doug Wagner Fishing, and I get screwed out of this a lot because my last name is Wegner, not WA. So I feel like I get screwed out of a lot of that, exposure, people that search my stuff. But yeah, Doug Wagner Fishing is, the name of my website. Instagram is Doug Wagner Fishing. I have a Facebook page, Doug Wagner Fishing, and then my channel is also Doug Wagner Fishing. So basically, Doug Wagner Fishing across the board. If you Google me, you'll find pictures or find some kind of link to me. Just, yeah, that's about it.
The guy with massive musky pictures. That's him.
That's me.
So, all right, we'll have Yeah, we'll have all that in the show notes too. So if you are looking for them, you can go find it in the show notes. We appreciate you taking the time out of your day, Doug. I know it's kind of late in the evening now too, but we really appreciate sitting down and talking fishing.
No, it was a blast. Thanks for having me, guys. That was an hour and a half went by pretty quick.
Yes, it did. Thank you very much.
Sure did. All right. Thanks, Doug. Thanks, boys. Appreciate it. All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Another great episode, part two with Doug Wagner. Something I found super interesting was the part where he talked about figure eights and how critical they are to musky fishing, which, I mean, we all, I believe, would have heard of figure eights and whatnot. But like when he got into the topic about, you know, Lake of the Woods versus Green Bay, how Lake of the Woods musky seemed to be a lot more follow happy, and how 75% of his fish are, you know, he catches boatside. I thought that was a super, super interesting topic.
Yeah, no, I didn't expect it to be that high of a percentage. Like, I know he did say it changes lake to lake, but I mean, when you see like Aaron Weave's videos or any of the other videos where they're fishing for muskie, you're always seeing him do this figure eight. And I thought that was just kind of like, obviously it's to finish off the fish, but I didn't realize that it was actually like the main way that lots of people do catch their muskie. Like, obviously you see the strikes because that's what people are going to be entertained in the videos, right? But I just, yeah, like you said, I was kind of dumbfounded when he said that many come there. I'm kind of like, well, obviously you got to cast it so it can follow and stuff like that. But it's like, you see them bombing those baits out there and it's like, you're doing all that. And then like I don't know if he said in the interview or if he's telling us after, but like some fish he's worked for multiple minutes back and forth with the figure eight. Hey.
Yeah. And it's just crazy. And like the amount of baits, I mean, for those of you obviously that are listening to this, go check out our social media. We're going to post some clips and pictures and stuff. But when Doug took us down into his basement, he has a bloody tackle shop in his basement. Like the amount
maybe more than a tackle shop.
The amount of money in lures is unbelievable. It was pretty crazy. So yeah, if you're listening to this, go check out our social media. We'll be sure to post some behind the scenes video clips of Doug's basement there. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, no, I couldn't get over how many he has. Like, I know you obviously want, like he has the multiples, right? He's got however many of the baits, but then he has multiples of that same bait, right? Because you never know what's going to be working that day. And if that's what's working, you lose it. Well, then obviously you're SOL unless you have what he has, right? And I know that he obviously said that that's a bit, not a bit, it's quite overkill, right? But I mean, that's what he loves to do and that's what it's all about. So yeah, that was awesome to see. But I guess that wraps up part two. We have another two-parter coming up for our next two episodes. You probably seen if you follow us on socials who it is going to be, but we'll kind of tease that for now. But we've got to mention 13 Fishing, presenting sponsor of the podcast. We got it. You just got it. Presenting sponsors. I know I'll be using some stuff for sure. If I do make this lake trout trip that I mentioned in the intro there, we'll definitely be using some of the churros. That's kind of what my go-to was. Any other trips I've been on for Lakers. So I managed to pick some of those up in the summer, by I believe. And I don't know, it's kind of like I've always said, it's kind of a name that is synonymous with ice fishing for me. It's just, I think most half my rods that I kind of use on a regular basis seem to be 13 and stuff like that. And that was before any of the podcasts and everything like that. And it's just kind of something that I've always found goes with ice fishing.
Yeah. I mean, I think I touched on this in the last outro, but the Omen Black, as well as the Widowmaker Lake Trout Edition, two fantastic rods. You can get them in like a 38, 42, medium, heavy, with the oversized guides. With it being creeping up on February here and into March, those are going to be my two sticks that I'm pulling out for big, big pike. So obviously, I hope to get up and do some lake trout as well. But for pike as well, those are two great rods. That, I mean, a lot of people ask, hey, what kind of 13 fishing rod should I get if I want to do, big pike? And those are the two. Those are the two you want to get. And of course, if you are going to be getting anything, you can use our code WEEKENDWARRIORS, 15% off 13fishing.ca. We do have a little bit of a treat coming in the near future. We're just going to leave it at that, but We've been working.
That's where she stays.
Yeah, we've been working our butts off. We want to make sure that you guys that are tuning into the podcast, follow us on social media. You guys are getting exclusive access to awesome offers and deals and brands and products that you guys have come to love and obviously help put fish on the ice and in the boat. So stay tuned for some exciting news regarding some other discounts in the near future.
Yeah, for sure. I think just to kind of, I don't know, you were mentioning the Widowmaker there. I know if I do go on this trip, 100%, the Widowmaker with my bait runner reel will be sitting on the bottom of Clearwater Lake with some form of bait on a quick strike rig. If you can imagine, that's going to be sitting there with my iFish Pro. So I'm definitely hoping that one of those flags pop, because that's when you know it's most likely one of the big ones and should put up a good fight. I believe mine's a medium heavy with the extra large. Would you say extra large guides?
Yeah, so they're like an oversized.
Oversized.
I don't know the exact name. I'd have to look it up, but like they're an oversized guide, and basically what I love them for is because you get the smaller guides on all these custom rods, and if you're fishing outside, which most people want to be in mobile and finding fish. If it's cold, those little guides, they ice up completely. They shut completely, and it makes it nearly impossible. You're always popping the ice out of your eyelets, or it just becomes a pain in the ass. And with these oversized guides, I haven't once had one completely ice up or me having to break the ice out of it. It's such a nice feature that one might overthink, or you might look at the rod and be like, why are the guides so big? I don't need that. But it's such a nice feature. It just it's more enjoyable because you're not consistently breaking up your rod's ice.
Yeah. And if those are icing up with those oversized guides, maybe it's just time to go in the shack or just not be out there, because that'd be ridiculous.
I'd say. But of course, stay tuned to our social medias. We are going to be doing a giveaway. I'm going to say in the near future for a 10th year anniversary 13 Fishing Free Fall Ghost.
Shiny gold.
Yeah, it's the 10th anniversary special edition. So they're pretty hard to get your hands on. We're going to be giving one of those away to one of you lucky listeners and followers on social media. Of course, the podcast is free. We aren't charging anything for the podcast, but there is a charge.
What is it?
All we ask is that you share the show, an episode, with somebody that enjoys fishing, whether that be, a family member, a friend, somebody that you see or talking to in a Facebook group. Just share it with one person. That's all we ask. It's a lot of work, and we enjoy doing it. And without you guys, it wouldn't be a reality. So we'd like to continue to grow the show and make sure we're reaching anglers from coast to coast and from different areas of the world.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess that probably concludes this episode. So thanks for giving it a listen, and stay tuned for the next one.
Thanks for tuning in to the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to leave a review on your favorite listening platform so we can reach more anglers just like you. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for media updates and behind-the-scenes content.